Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric 13. I have a 13 in my name. That is my actual name, by the way. Did you know that?
Yeah. Did you hear that?
What does that sound?
Those are the little pop-up video icons for anybody who's watching along at home.
No one's going to remember that. I don't even remember if I left that in the episode. Popping up in my video is Michael Kester.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a weird show today, if you've never listened to one of these before.
Live, uncensored, no spoilers, uncut. Real deal.
It's true. This used to be an entire hour and a half of film spotting jokes, but then that show disappeared from my iTunes library, so we had no one to make fun of.
So we've had to turn our sights inward.
I actually want to thank the people over at this other show.
Battleship Retention.
They do a really fucking cool show, and they talk about us every week.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice of them.
Now, unlike them, where they encourage people to come listen to our show, I'm going to encourage everybody to not go over there because I'm insecure and I think everybody's show is better than mine. So let's just go back to making fun of film spotting.
All right.
That'll be fine.
Sounds good.
Actually, let me ask you straight off the bat about this. It's been a while since we talked about a lot of these ideas. We sort of name check them on the show and then just expect people to understand what we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just been a while since we talked about them. I don't know if our feelings have changed, and that's kind of going to be a general theme of the episode. How we felt about things and our favorite films and our least favorite pair, whatever, all that good countdown-y nonsense people like.
Sure, right. Yeah, top tens.
Without spoilers, but including chapters.
Uh-huh.
I'm like stumbling backwards through the intros. I want to talk about things and not go through all the stuff at the beginning. Just a couple weeks ago, we were bashing film critics, as we seem to just do haphazardly for no reason.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
And somebody emailed us and kind of pointed out that, you know, you fall under the kind of broad definition of film critic yourself, and what have you to say, sir, and blah, blah, blah. Why don't we like film critics? Do we not like film critics?
I really don't like film critics.
What do you got against film criticism, Michael Kester?
I have the same problems with film criticism as every other type of art criticism, and it's that every single human being in the entire world is an individual, and their opinion does not matter more than any other single human being on the face of the planet. So somebody who has more public clout than, say, your average Joe the Plumber can get on a soapbox on some website and tell you that this movie that someone has poured their entire life and well-being and probably financial gain into is not worth anybody else in the entire world's time.
You don't like when they say bad things about films.
It's not. I just don't think it's fair. If all 7 billion people on the planet went and saw some fucking movie, and all 7 billion people on the planet, sans maybe the one person who made it, one of the many people who put a lot of work into this movie, said that they fucking hated it, and that person said they fucking loved it, you know who's right?
Who is right?
Fucking everybody. Everybody's fucking right.
Okay. Yeah, opinions are highly subjective. I mean, I guess we're still on the same page about that. I don't dislike people talking about movies. I just kind of want to make sure my position was clear.
I don't either.
We're not blind to the fact that we come on here and talk about movies every week.
Sure.
You stupid double feature guys. Can't you even see that you're doing the very thing?
Total hypocrite bullshit.
No, actually, the guy who emailed us was one of the people who emails us every week, and we love them. So I'm not, this is also not a long-winded rant against that particular individual, who I'm sure I'll talk about 50 times during the course of the show, but will not name check now because I am afraid that he will think I hate him. Which I totally don't. No, I just kind of wanted to further clarify some of the mission statement here. You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to come on here and if there's a listener, if we have any amount of listeners who are in fact film critics, I don't have a problem with you. I think you're great and I'm glad that you managed to find work doing film shit. That's cool. But at the end of the day, I just don't think that anybody should be walking around like their opinion matters more than I don't want somebody eating a sandwich from Subway and telling me I shouldn't eat it. That might be a perfectly, you don't know what I like to eat. Fuck you.
Right.
You don't even like tuna. It's a tuna sandwich. Fuck you. I will eat my own goddamn tuna sandwich.
My biggest thing is, and the easiest way for me to clarify how I think about this is I don't like people being discouraged from going and experiencing something.
Agreed.
And I feel like, I mean, I don't know. I'm never on the fence enough about a movie that someone can push me off just by blowing the gentle wind of I don't like the film this way.
Oh, I totally can. I totally can.
Yeah?
Because, well,
just, maybe I just don't like to think I can.
I just think about it. Well, maybe not that I'll never see a film, but if I'm on the fence about going to see a film in the theater, AKA actually seeing a film, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't go see a movie in the theater, that's basically me saying I don't care about that movie. And there have been films where in the history of time, I've thought, I don't think I care about this movie. Maybe I do. And I just hear somebody gently going, eh. And my opinion goes, right. You know, I'll get it when it's on fucking Netflix. But that also works the other way. I've been on the fence about films like Edge of Tomorrow. And suddenly somebody goes, eh. And I'm thinking, oh shit, I got to see that right now.
Right. So maybe you just don't like being influenced. You don't like that there are people out there.
I don't. I hate being influenced. I don't think that's a secret.
I think I'm a big fucking liar and I'm totally swayed by other people's opinions, things we talk about on the show, but I like to think I'm not.
That's a big, big, big part of why I avoid spoilers. It's not just because I don't want to know what happens in a movie. It's because I don't want other people telling me about the movie. In a way, I mean,
especially at the point where you're on board, once you're on board,
exactly. That's my thing.
Maybe I'll poke at it enough to become interested and then I'll run away.
I haven't watched a Sin City 2 trailer since I saw the first one.
Yeah, I know.
I refuse because I'm afraid that I'm going to be disappointed or just suddenly not care.
I mean, what I do like, and you know, to go the totally opposite direction, maybe I'm defining critic in my head as somebody whose sole purpose is to tell you see it or skip it, you know?
Yeah, that's important. That is an important distinction.
I like people having conversations. That's what we're doing. I like people who bring up ideas that I didn't think about.
Yeah.
And get deeper into a film and help you take more out of it.
Right.
And if they even want to go so far as to say if a filmmaker's attempt was effective in doing that or not, I mean, I don't know. That's where the line starts to get gray for me. But you know what? Whatever. It's just part of the conversation. You and I have frank conversations about if things are effective or not.
Right.
We just don't do it on the show.
I just fundamentally disagree with the thumbs up, thumbs down method.
Sure. Well, but it's so really interesting that you mentioned thumbs up, thumbs down, because I also think Ebert has, for as short as his writing on film typically was per film, I also think he has a lot of really insightful things to say while he's...
He definitely does. But here's a really good...
Or did, I suppose.
Well, he's still saying them.
Sure.
That is the very definition of living forever, is making art that people go back to. But I recently read his review on both I Spit on Your Grave films.
Sure.
And... what I found really interesting is that he fucking hated the original I Spit on Your Grave. He said it was a despicable film about despicable things and despicable people.
Right.
To me, I think that that's silly because obviously that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
And then, but what, here's the interesting part, right? Is I then read his I Spit on Your Grave, the 2008, 2009, the remake.
Right.
And he basically says, I hated this movie in the 70s. I think it was a despicable film about despicable people doing despicable things. However, this version looks so good.
That's funny because I felt the same way about those movies.
He basically comes out and says, I hate everything about this movie. Don't see it. Don't buy into the machine. But, you know, whoever was running that camera knew what they were doing.
Well, and it's always great, you know, looking at Ebert's work. For this specifically, but I mean, he had one of the loudest voices in the history of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
He is a household name, and his work has been looked at and studied really more so than many of the films he commented on.
Right.
And I think you can actually learn a lot just through the study of Ebert's criticism in the same way that you would by watching movies.
If you want to learn a lot about Roger Ebert, you need to get big into his criticism and then go back and look at the two scripts he wrote.
What was the other one he wrote?
Well, he did Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which we've covered.
Right.
But he also...
Wasn't the other one the one that was published on his site, right?
Right, the unproduced Sex Pistols movie.
That's right. That's what that was. Yeah, I remember we talked about that.
Which I...
Well, and also he kind of gains our favor because unlike where we, you know, just sort of sit here without thinking and dismiss critics and go, well, you're not making films, fuck you.
Yeah.
He showed up and he made a film.
Yep.
With Russ Meyer.
Yep. And I mean, that's better than you and I will ever do.
Yeah. So he wins. We did make a film this year. Oh, look at that segue. Let me ruin that segue. This is going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
Don't try and follow this conversation.
We're just going to chat
for an hour and a half.
I keep feeling like we're getting off topic. And then I realized
there's no topic this episode.
The topic is a clock that's counting backwards from 90.
It's funnier to me the more we dismiss the things that people think they like about this episode, like what are the best films of the year or whatever. So the smaller amount of time we can leave that and the more we can infuriate the people who care over that, the funnier that is to me.
My favorite thing about these shows is the emails. That's my favorite thing about these shows.
Oh yeah, I don't have any of those queued up.
Yeah, I'm assuming as
much.
I'm going
to reference emails that I thought I read.
Sure.
From months ago.
I can read just some emails.
You and I are going to get to everything before that. You and I will be going over my tax return before we get to any fucking best films or the whatever. Something I have actually been dying to talk to you about on this show because we were so in the throes of the Kickstarter. Is that even a phrase?
Sure. What the fuck?
That we didn't really get any time to talk about it on the show where we weren't just riddled with... you know, emotional anxiety over it.
Mm-hmm.
But we made a movie.
Yeah.
You and I actually made
We
can call it that.
Yeah.
It ended up being 20 minutes. I mean,
that's a short.
Closer to
that's a fucking
film
short.
Than I've ever made before.
Sure.
And also more creative input in a film than I've ever made before. So I'm still piggybacking off of Adam Rifkin and Penn Jillette's film, Director's Cut.
Mm-hmm.
But that's their fucking film. I have no input in that. I'll be lucky if they don't kick me off the lot while they're filming it, right?
Right.
I'm a parasite on that film. And I've done, you know, sound design and stuff for these smaller movies that nobody's ever seen, but they're even just shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say they, as if there's several, I really mean one. And I mean one of the directors disowned it and I don't talk to the other director.
Awesome.
So that's pretty much my film history. Now you have had a more artistically successful film history and that you have made things.
That's one way to look at it.
That exist from start to end and tell stories.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing is what's interesting for my more recent film history, which I guess I'm speaking...
You're doing cover films, which is awesome.
Yeah, I hate it.
No, it's awesome.
Well, it's fun and it's funny, but at the end of the day, man, like I'm doing episodes of Futurama and Saved by the Bell. I feel myself doing commentary on shit that doesn't need to be commented on.
Right. Well, welcome to year 7 of Double Feature.
I'm doing Saved by the Bell going, yeah, but I mean, you know what really sucked about these 90s TV shows? Fucking everything. I mean, I'm not making any interesting points by mocking these already. I mean, it's, you want to talk about low hanging fruit? I'm picking fruit up off the ground and hanging it on the tree. To pick it off. That's what I'm doing.
Well, okay. You mentioned Saved by the Bell, but you are a fan of Futurama.
Fuck
and
yeah.
You didn't mention the one that really matters, which is Twin Peaks one.
Right. Well, that's not quite out yet. It's probably out momentarily. I just have to basically do another pass of the sound.
It's never finished, man. Only abandoned.
I know.
That's what I learned about filmmaking. So.
Yep.
That's what I learned about our time-boxed Kickstarter. I also learned that time-boxing your movie is the best way to make it because then you actually make it instead of just saying you will.
Sure.
If I had to release end-of-state songs every single week, I would have 6 albums now,
right?
Instead of like -1 album.
Yeah. See, what I learned is that you can increase your production value on any movie by making a really cool looking puppet and making that the actual thing that's going on.
Fuck yes.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, you can. That whole thing was just we're talking about our Kickstarter video. So
the Kickstarter video, right.
I'm sure everybody knows. We just jump into these things like people know, but we filmed a sort of a video mini series for Kickstarter.
Sure.
Our Kickstarter totally got fucking funded. Thank you guys a ton.
Thank you.
That was a really, really difficult couple weeks. And it was even shorter than the last one, but
way shorter.
We made more money and even fewer people gave, which means you guys all gave more money this time around. And I felt like we tried to make it even less dire because we didn't want to be negative about it.
Right.
And people still ponied up. So thank you so much for that.
It's a huge deal.
So we filmed this video as a part of it.
Right.
And one of the other things that I learned from this is that you can definitely boost a lot of your production value in post.
Yeah.
And so these things that you and I talk about of, you know, always trying to do it in the lens and get the practical stuff. Mm-hmm. I also learned that, you know, that really does sell a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff in there that I won't point out for fear that people go look at it and see how terrible it is. But there were things that we kind of did in post because we hadn't set them up or whatever.
Right.
And then there were times we did those same things a little more in the scene.
Right.
And they look way better in the scene.
And it's...
But we got really, the idea kind of in post.
Right. Well, what's really interesting is that basically what we're saying is two different ends of the spectrum. You're saying that, you know, and I agree that there's definitely a lot that can be done in post. But also, if somebody makes you this awesome puppet, all you got to do is put that in a dark room and you film it.
True.
And that's... it looks so good. I mean, I want to thank Hannah Carter. We put a thing on we have a Facebook page, right? That's the internet.
Yes.
There's a picture.
Well, hold on a second. No, Facebook is not the internet, but
okay,
yeah,
you're
along the right lines.
There's an image on our Facebook page that she's tagged in.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to that. She does puppets. That's her thing.
She is amazing. Amazing.
And so, I mean, you and I had discussed, okay, let's do this Kickstarter video. Let's make a film and not a stupid plea for help. And I had mentioned the idea of doing a Saw themed thing. And I think both of us, when I first said it, our initial reactions were, yeah, how good can that be?
Parody.
Right, exactly. And so I feel like we were kind of dragging our feet on this idea, but I ran the idea past Hannah and she got to working on this puppet. And I think as soon as you and I saw Kicksaw, that was when we kind of went, oh no, this is a thing now.
Right. Well, there was that double-edged sort of celebration and panic. Because then I was like, oh, we brought a person in to help us.
Right.
And they did a way better job than we're going to do. Fuck.
Yeah.
Because when it was just you and I fucking around, then it was no pressure. But suddenly somebody else goes, oh, I'll help you momentarily. Here, let me just hand you this little thing I made. And it turns out to be fucking incredible.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, well, we can't disappoint this other person whose work we're using. So yeah, that was really difficult. And you know, that happened. I was at the end of the production line on this because part of the design of it was that you wanted to create something that I didn't have to be, you know, super time involved in.
Right.
Because I just don't have the time for it. And so we kind of make jokes around that in the thing itself. But also I wanted to get more involved as I saw how awesome it was. And I got really excited about it. And I kind of just, you know, a couple sleepless nights or whatever to try and make something for it. And that was another moment of panic is you give me this script and it's really fucking funny. And then and that's even more to me because you also filmed all the Kicksaw scenes.
Right.
And they were good. And so then everything was good. But the script...
Well, no, I mean, there's also... Let credit where credit's due or undue. I also had to film myself chained up in a bathtub.
Yeah. Well, that's hard, right?
That is hard. That's hard, man.
I did a lot of work on on your scenes. So yeah, there is a lot of like post kind of stuff there. And that's what I was talking about, where I was able to kind of fake a depth of field.
Sure. Sure.
And you know, I think another big moment where I'm actually proud of the work I did on it was the color and getting it to kind of look mm-hmm. like, you know, a bullshit horror movie.
Sure.
To kind of give it the
right
the ugly Saw, whatever.
To look a stuff. Step above Trauma, man. Always just one step above Trauma.
One of my favorite shots of that is towards the end where you do a pan from
yeah
your living room in the day to your bathroom.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes very clear in that shot because it's hard to color correct since it's all one fluid shot. So I had to color correct your bathroom separately from the living room and then transition as it swipes across the door. So it makes the lighting and everything look really glib and desaturated
right.
when you get in there. And then it swipes back to your room and it's just your house and everything's fine. But yeah, so reading your dialogue is what I was saying.
Sorry, yeah.
It was really scary for me because I'm thinking, well, the part I'm going to suck up the most is acting because I just don't fucking know what I'm doing at all. I don't mm-hmm. even know how to judge other people's acting, let alone do I know
agreed. Like, yep.
how the fuck to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you write all this dialogue, which was pretty natural for me.
Sure.
And there are all these in-jokes from the show and they're not hard.
The thing about writing that was really fun from my end is that I guess this is probably what you do when you write. I mean, I have no fucking idea. I've never really had to do this, but I basically took two characters that I was very familiar with, threw them in a situation that I was pretty familiar with because of, you know, seeing Saw. And it was a very, my goal was the most natural melding of those two things is to go, well, what happens if Eric and I are in Saw? Really, what happens?
Right, right.
If Eric and I are in Saw and minor Saw, not actual, you know, our arms are in a fucking laser sure, razor trap. Sure.
Right.
But just what happens if the silly puppet from Saw shows up and tries to make our lives tough? I mean, yeah. How does that look?
Yeah, and you know, it's hard as you're doing so many jobs on a film. That's one of the things I've always admired about, we talked about Robert Rodriguez last episode, is how many things he can do at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that as much as I love that, there is also a breaking point. And for me, that's being in front of the camera on top of the 10 other things.
Right.
I think I can handle sound and cinematography and editing and color and directing. But when I'm also in the scene, it's officially too much for me to do. And so that was really difficult trying to remember to make an artistically satisfying thing. There were moments where it became production, where it was just assembly line, put the camera there, point it at the thing. Is the sound on? Is the camera on? It became machine work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I would look at the footage and go, well, yeah, I mean, I guess technically I got the stuff that's on the list of things I have to get, but it's also supposed to like fucking look good or mean something.
Right.
Or be, you know, it's not enough to just go, well, is there a guitar part? Does it line up in the tempo and melody of the bass part? Are there drums? Good, I've got a song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of go, oh, well, is it total shit or is there something there? So yeah, there were a lot of scenes where I would go back and I was totally done with it. And I felt like, okay, I can check that off my to-do list, looked at it and went, there's nothing artistically satisfying about this. I have to redo this. It fucking sucks. That's where a lot of the weird stuff, like the circular camera from that one shot where I'm watching Long Island Medium. And that whole thing was really tough because that whole episode, you wrote that one last.
Right.
We just kind of chucked it in
mm-hmm.
because I was like, hey, write more stuff for me. I want to be in it more. And so you're like, how's this? I'm like, whatever, it's fine. And then I read it. I'm like, I'm not really sure how this fits in. What am I doing here? Like, I'd read the other stuff enough to get the punch of it
mm-hmm.
and kind of like where the joke was at and what the chapter was about, how it would end was a fucking thing I was obsessed about. And that one, it was just, I kept going back to the scenes we shot going, you know, what is there to this? What makes this one special? I don't know, you know, I don't know what I'm doing here. And so I shot this weird scene that was so hard because I also don't have any equipment. I have a photography camera that I barely even use. And I wanted to do, you know, David Fincher, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo style camera circling around someone typing on a computer, investigating a thing kind of scene. And I didn't know how the fuck to do that. And I don't have any kind of, you know, I mean, that's probably done with a really fluid dolly on rails or what. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But to try and get that look. So we have a camera and we're pulling it along on a box in a circle around me, trying to get it to look like it's on rails. And then in post, we're able to stabilize it enough that hopefully you can't tell it's a big piece of awful. So I had a lot of fun with it. The whole thing was, I'm really proud of it for, you know, all its rushed production and Kickstarter anxiety. I think the whole thing turned out really awesome. Also, there's a bit actually in that episode, another thing that I thought was really fucking funny. I had a little help from Shella, who also helped with our Kickstarter this year and will probably be one of those many names I have to chuck into a spreadsheet. And so now we're going through the come up with the schedule and figure out who the fuck all these people are.
Right.
But she had helped me film a lot of this. And so she does the voice of the Long Island Medium woman.
Oh, okay.
And that was a fucking riot to film because we had never seen Long Island Medium before.
Sure.
I was saving it for like watching it in the thing and trying to figure out. And it is really the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
I mean,
dude.
I don't know how the fuck you heard of Long Island Medium. I had never even heard of it. But it was so bad. And I thought it'd be really funny if we, because we're not going to steal stuff from the show. We want to make something unique in our own and without infringing copyright and all that. So we were listening, we were on iTunes on the store, listening to the free clips of the episodes, trying to like mimic things the woman was saying and then come up with something, you know, that would be 5 seconds long and absurdly ridiculous that she could just squeak out while I'm watching it. So yeah, anyways, the Kickstarter is over. There's a year 7.
That's right.
And while it may be too early to announce, we'll figure it out, but I would like this to be the last Kickstarter.
I think so too, yeah.
I don't know how we're going to do that. I want to keep doing the show. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make it dependent on a Kickstarter every time.
I don't either.
I'll die.
Yeah.
This one seemed harder than the last one.
It was harder.
Why is that? Shouldn't we be more used to it? We had a better plan. Well,
no, I think that the reality is that the previous Kickstarter came after 6 years. And this one came after 1 year.
Right. So we need to wait another 6 years. And by then we'll need to raise $500,000.
So that we can make a film to talk about on Double Feature because we'll be done.
Right. We'll have watched every movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're very strategically planning how to set things up in a way where we won't have to keep fundraising. And we're looking at all of that stuff now. So fingers crossed. We won't have to do this again. I don't think this will be the last time you have to give me the best pairs of the year, though, which is what you have to do right now and go.
Oh, boy. The best pairs of the year. Okay. I've got this. This one's easy.
Yeah. And you know what? Don't make fun of this because you pair movies for a living, sir. That's what you do. You come on here and you go, these movies go together. So tell me where you did that and it was good.
What's interesting is that I had a hard time coming up with worst pairs.
Oh, because you did such a good job.
Because I feel like we're just getting so good. We're getting so good at this. But
you asshole.
But my best pairs.
Uh-huh.
My best pairs. I liked the FP with Hobo with a Shotgun.
Sure.
I felt like that was a very well-preserved tone from start to finish. And also Canadian, a little Canada.
Yeah.
I liked Wrong and Upstream Color, so hats off. That one was you.
Well, that was just movies we haven't seen that are by directors. Mostly luck that happened. But I agree with you on that one. That was a really, really solid.
But this is my favorite pair, and it's probably not a surprise to you. Metropolitan and Friday.
Oh man.
Hands down.
Okay, so you've nailed one of mine. Let's talk about this a little bit.
Number one favorite pair we did last year.
All right, so what do you like about this?
Okay, well,
besides
first off,
everything,
I like
everything because that's what I like.
Everything.
About it.
No, really. but I love both of these movies. I think that Friday is unbelievably good and that Metropolitan is unbelievably good. But I also just, they're hangout movies for the absolute 100% opposite cultures.
Sure.
But I feel like they appeal to everyone. I feel like they don't alienate their audience. I feel like they're both equally funny for absolutely the right reasons. Everything about Metropolitan After Friday, you have to watch Friday first, because Friday's a comedy, straight up, knows it's joking. But when you watch Metropolitan with Friday on your tongue, everything seems so much more appropriate and just so much clearer at what the film is driving at the ludicrous nature of these people's lives.
Right. Well, in the order, I do think that order is a curious thing to think about, because they have totally different effects depending on what you do first.
Right, right.
And I actually think doing Friday first, if you do Metropolitan first, then you're not really setting the context for it. So it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to Friday and the joke of the culture clash is right there at the beginning of Friday. But Friday's already a comedy. And so I like that setup in this one of doing Friday first, because Friday is not, there is no wrong context for Friday. It's going to give you its fucking context.
That's right.
You're going to watch that movie the way it wants to be watched. There's no other way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to Metropolitan, I feel like Friday has set the appropriate context.
I agree
because
completely.
Metropolitan wants it to seem more fish out of water than maybe it even does.
Mm-hmm.
And when you follow Friday with it, you've been hanging out in a different part of town, and now you get here, and it just seems like the appropriate way to view that.
Mm-hmm.
I just said the appropriate way to view Metropolitan was with Friday, which no one on planet Earth will agree with. But
and they're all wrong. I agree.
Yeah, and that was also one of those that defied expectation a little bit, because we sort of did it as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Haha, different cultures, whatever,
that's,
culture
that's
shock.
That's definitely not in my defied expectation list, so I can't agree with that.
All right. I loved all of the double features equally this year, and we can move on. Now, there were a few in here. We tend to overlook our adventure of the year.
Yeah.
And I didn't set apart any special time to talk about it.
What are you talking? Set apart time? We have another hour.
I know, but I didn't write it down in this this notepad that I'm strictly adhering to.
Sure.
If you
sure.
haven't noticed, we've been following this exactly. See, I wrote down talk about nothing for 30 minutes, and we've done that.
I believe the first thing on that list is Killapalooza, which we managed to just gloss right over.
All right, whatever. The point I was getting at is, let's talk about it right fucking now.
Agreed. Yeah.
So I had a hard time even through the year figuring out what this adventure was.
Mm-hmm.
It was even less well-defined than these things usually are. It was kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, we got the old school monster stuff.
Yep.
Universal. Classic mm-hmm. monsters. We know that. I still don't know how to describe these sci-fi films.
They're
important
you know,
sci-fi films.
Yeah, well, I don't really know. I can't help you there.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But I can say that in previous adventures, I've definitely had a hand in the planet. I think that the Rocky Asia adventure, that took a little bit of research on my end to kind of put that together in a way that made sense.
Yeah, that was all you. I just went, I want to do Rocky, and you went, okay, I'll figure this out.
But these pairs, I mean, it was probably for me, see, knowing the Asia stuff as we were doing it, this to me felt like the most learning experience so far on the show, because I had seen none of these. And also, interesting fact about me, the classic sci-fi movies, something like Logan's Run, Soylent Green, Stepford, basically everything you did except Silent Running, which I just never fucking heard of. Those are the kind of movies that I just tell myself I've seen. Does that make sense?
Sort of. But
don't
you?
Pretend you don't do this. It's this thing where somebody goes, here's a really good example, Citizen Kane.
Sure.
Somebody goes, yeah, you know, it's just like in Citizen Kane where derp a derp a der. And instead of even fathom going, oh, I haven't seen Citizen Kane. I just go, uh-huh, right, like in Citizen Kane. Exactly.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Because I just, it's the kind of movie where I feel like I've been trying to go back into this back catalog, and I watched Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm. That's one that I do that with, yeah.
Right.
That's one of my highest ratios of I have no idea what Apocalypse Now is even about.
Right.
I know that there's helicopters in it.
Right.
It's literally the only fact I have. I know nothing else.
What else did I watch? I watched Full Metal Jacket.
A lot of war movies,
and a lot of the two areas of film, there were three areas of film that I was completely oblivious to. War movies that aren't directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
The gangster movies, your Casinos and your Scarface and your Goodfellas and your Godfathers.
So you don't mean the South Central LA gangster?
No, I've got movies. That shit. Back and forth.
Man, that was another thing. I feel like we have to do another Friday just to talk about that. I don't feel like we hit on that that whole sect of movies quite enough. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but the third thing that I was completely oblivious to was Westerns until...
Oh, sure.
I believe that was one of our additional contents basically schooled me.
Yeah.
I don't want to say completely, but let's be honest. I knew spaghetti Westerns exclusively, Eric. Sure. I had not seen a single non-spaghetti Western until we had to do our additional content on Westerns. And that was one of the most interesting experiences I've ever done in a genre that I was convinced I'd seen the best of.
Right.
I felt like it's the opposite of how I feel with jazz. I felt like somebody was like, yo, spaghetti Westerns. And I was like, cool, I'm going to watch that. And these are clearly the best of this genre. Which is the opposite of how I feel. Opposite of how I feel about jazz. I feel like if everybody in the entire world said this is the best jazz record, I would listen to it and go, is this what jazz sounds like? I'm not sure. I need to listen to literally everything that's ever come out, and I'll let you know if I like jazz.
Right. Whereas Westerns, you sort of go, oh, the exploity ones. Give me that.
Right.
That is clearly the best one. Yeah. Well, I was awakened to that during Shane, which I think was actually probably our first Western movie on this. But when we saw Westworld with Shane for that additional content show, and the fact that these are all additional content should be proof right there that we never fucking watched them, that people had to basically force them onto our show to get us to see them. I kind of went, oh, there's a lot of commentary on a genre going on in this that I am oblivious to. So I just relied on Shane for fucking everything. It was kind of like our anime show this year, where I had to fight so hard not to go, what's Skycrawlers doing? Well, let me think back to Akira, which is going to represent 100% of all anime that's ever existed for the purposes of what I know. And see, you know, what this does differently or the same.
We're definitely going to be revisiting that pair of films on today's show.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. So I really did like a lot of these, but I think Sharkboy and Lavagirl and Mulholland Drive, strangely, because of the weird Aesop thing where Sharkboy and Lavagirl had a piece that may have solved a missing part of Mulholland Drive for me.
Uh-huh.
And also, I don't know if this is going to come up somewhere else, probably, because every time I have an opportunity to say anything good, I'm going to say it about Mulholland Drive. But I think we did a really fucking good job on that episode.
Yeah, I think so too. That was good.
I was listening to it again after the, for the machete thing. And I feel like we actually, so since even recording it, I've forgotten what the fuck Mulholland Drive is about. And so now I have, even just for my own purposes, I have a conversation where I feel like you and I got really close to understanding what I think can be my solution for that film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, film being subjective, there's no real right answer, especially for that movie. But I feel like we hit some really good stuff in that. I'm really proud of that episode. Since we're going at random here, what else do you want to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. We can talk about, we covered best pairs. I suppose there's a logical next step.
And that is Killapaloozas.
That's right. That's where I was going. Oh.
Okay. So give me the bad news then. What are the worst pairs here? Where did we suck it up and how can we blame it on the listeners?
I got three worst pairs here.
Oh, wow.
Three worst pairs. But I mean, these are, I had to really do some soul searching to find these worst pairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take the blame for almost all of this shit. I will take this. I will put this on me. One, Giallo and Ghosts of Mars. I still agree with the theory. I still really like the Argento Carpenter double feature.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the failing was our gross misrepresentation of the two at their cores. I know that Giallo is not the strongest Argento movie.
Sure.
And Ghosts of Mars is certainly
the best Doom adaptation ever made.
Right, but also completely non-complimentary to Giallo.
That's true too. We weren't putting those in a very good light.
Yeah, by pairing exactly.
Them. We didn't do anybody any favors there.
We had this great idea to put these two fabulous directors next to each other. And in doing so, we made this is a misstep that we are definitely capable of making. We go, what haven't we done yet?
Sure.
Let's do that.
Man, way to reveal the secret sauce here. Well, but this is a problem we face. We are completionists. We love talking about somebody's complete work.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to leave any corner unexamined on our show. And so we did have, you know, we had another Argento to talk about. We had another Carpenter. And I thought there was valuable stuff in that episode. I don't think it was a bad episode.
I'm not saying it was a bad episode. I'm just saying it's a bad pair.
As far as a pair, yeah. The real theme of that pair was two more recent films by directors that we haven't covered yet.
Yeah, by directors that would pair better in the 1980s.
Yeah, but we already did those.
And so here's my second worst pair, and I already mentioned it before. I think Akira and Skycrawlers was probably a small-minded call.
Sure. All right.
I like both movies. I think we did a really, really solid job with that show. But come on, anime? Really? That's probably my fault. I don't remember exactly the logical conclusion there. In fact, I don't know if I ever heard it, but my brain can definitely create the synaptic connections where you say to me, come on, anime? And I go, whatever. There's plenty to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know. We both struggled with that one. I do remember trying to pair that, and we just didn't. At the end of the day, we had to fill that slot in our schedule, and we didn't know what to do. I mean, that was part of why we were doing it to begin with. Somebody said, do Skycrawlers, and we went, we don't know what the fuck we're doing.
Yep. And this is this part, this little next, the next and final worst pair is probably going to surprise you.
Oh, no.
The Lords of Salem and Machete Kills.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If you want to talk about two films that undermine the tonality of each other, I would tell you to put Machete Kills next to Lords of Salem and watch them on a Friday night.
Now,
if you want to figure out a way to disenjoy two fantastic movies, put Lords of Salem next to Machete Kills. Put one of the most nuanced and slow burn movies that ends in absolute dread and failure next to an hour and a half long film that covers 20 years worth of film that changes genres from start to finish.
And includes a joke about Charlie Sheen winning.
Exactly.
I mean, that was what we put up against Lord of Salem.
And so, again, I want to go on record. Loved the movies. We did a fine show. But man, I look at these like if some friends came over and asked me to put two movies next to each other, what should we watch?
This would not be one.
What I would absolutely under no circumstances do would be that.
Yeah, you know, it was the end of the year, and I'm going to come up with an excuse for every one of yours. This is painful.
Yeah.
No, but I do feel like these are legitimate things that I think. So this isn't a defense, and really, it's just the pairing of two films. People mm-hmm. like this show. Who gives a fuck what we screw up? But you know what I mean? I don't know. People are going to email us and go, great show this week, and we didn't even talk about anything. I don't know. I have no idea what people like. You can't attempt to please people. It's just with the invention of the internet, no one can be pleased ever for anything.
True.
But the Lords of Salem and Machete Kills were both really First of all, we wanted to give ourselves a little reward for the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Two films we really want to talk about. They're by directors named Rob, which we thought was funny, but really I'm not doing myself any favor here by saying that. It's, come on, Michael. Rob Zombie, Robert Rodriguez. It's a perfect double feature. How could you?
I believe there was definitely a point in the conversation where the theme was men whose middle names are fucking.
Right. Right. That was... No, but I mean, I'm glad I kind of got to vent a little bit, although perhaps I beat down our audience a little bit too much about everybody's desire to be validated when they watch movies and not to just go enjoy something for what it is. And I don't mean that in the way people typically do. I don't mean, oh, it's a mindless, senseless, whatever, just lower your standards and go enjoy it, which is what people mean when they say that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, really take this for what it is, and what that is someone else's artistic vision, and go try and learn from that, understand it, see what goes on inside their head. I think those are really pure looks inside those directors' heads. And to go, well, I didn't like it, is kind of like saying, I saw inside Robert Rodriguez's head and I disagree with his brain. I mean, I don't understand why you would even make that comment. You know, this gets back to us in criticism. I just don't, we are wired differently than normal people. I just can't understand why that, it seems like an insane thing to say. It's like you were saying about fucking sandwiches. You know, like, why would you? I don't know. I just don't understand. I'm looking at this list and actually just seeing a bunch of stuff that I like that we didn't talk about.
See?
So I'm going to cop out and say that The Machinist and Dogville was a really good pairing.
Okay.
Especially once you put that cover into place where they're both looking the same direction and it's the one actor on the front of the man. I don't know why, but that just did it for me. There's some dubious ones in here, like Wages of Fear and Office Space, which was our bad.
I think that's a great idea. Come on.
Really? You like that?
Hard Day at Work double feature. Are you kidding me?
As you say this to me, I say to you, Hard Day at Work double feature. Are you kidding me?
Trapped in a Rainy Room double feature, Eric.
People say we never disagree on this show. I don't know what they're talking about. Clearly, if you listen to our inflection... You know, can I give you one actually that a listener thought we fucked up?
Oh, good. Yeah, that sounds like it'll raise my spirits real high.
Yeah, let's just bottom out this whole middle of the show here. We got, we had referenced this kind of in passing a couple times, I think, but occasionally we get poor iTunes reviews or whatever. And those have kind of gone away lately as much as they can. And I think... we care even less now than ever before, but until our Kickstarter looks like it's not going to get backed. And then
until we read them. I mean,
Yeah, right. I'm in one of those periods now where I'm not reading them. That's why I don't care at all.
Right.
And then I'll go investigate and I'll cry for 4 weeks.
Right.
So the thing that we had kind of referenced in passing was this episode we did on sneakers and existence.
Oh,
you remember that?
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember why the fuck we did that pair. And these are all more things we fucked up on the show in general than the pairs. I just love all the pairs this year. I don't care. But there's some stuff that we kind of fucked up here and there. And
Death to Double Feature?
So we're fulfilling these Kickstarter pledges. People are saying, hey, try this movie out on the show. And we're going, all right, fuck it. We're going for it. And especially in those first few, Sneakers was, you know, the 5th or 10th show we did this year or something like that. It was early in the run.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why we did it with Existence. I loved Existence. Who cares why we did it with it? But we definitely saw Sneakers and went, okay, we're going to do a good job on this. We're going to be really positive about it. We're going to try and find the things that, for what I think is kind of a formula that's been copied a lot since Sneakers came out, you could certainly watch it and go, what's special about this? Because it was the first in what became a series of uninspired kinds of hackery, you know, espionage type movies. And so we tried to really give it the credit for what it was at the time and the cast that was in it and the things that were really interesting. And we walked away and went, all right, we got one of these. We did a good job on this. That one's going out to the internet and everything is great. And then I went out and the guy who requested it sent us an email and he was basically like, fuck you guys for fucking up my movie. He was not happy. I don't know what we said on it that made him unhappy. And I don't think he gave to the Kickstarter this year either. Although, like I said, yeah. I haven't gone over all the names. But yeah, he was really upset on our coverage of, what do you think he thought we missed?
Well, whenever I think about, whenever people that I speak to tell me things that we've done wrong with certain films on Double Feature, it always comes from the same thing. And we made a joke about it in the Kickstarter video regarding Ghostbusters. But
we made a joke about Ghostbusters?
Yeah. But it's that people come to me and say, yeah, well, you said this and this and this about the film, but what you neglected to say was that it came out during a time when Golden Girls was still the best TV show that you could see on television.
Right, right.
And, you know, Boston Market was still called Boston Chicken Shack, and there's a reference to that. And I'm sitting there going, dude, I'm 26 years old. I can't know what the film meant all the time. Sure. If a film came out in 1984 and I watch it in 2011, the best I can do is go, okay, well, what is this film doing among 80s movies?
Yeah.
Among right. 80s movies. Okay. What I can't do is go back. I wish I could. I wish I had this tenacity to Google what was going on in the world when movies were coming out before I watched them. But we have to watch fucking 104 plus movies a year.
Sure.
On top of the movies we have to watch in preparation for the next year.
Right.
I can't be on top of what's going on globally. If it's not World War II or Vietnam or right, women's right, suffrage.
Right. No, I get what you're saying.
Or the Kennedy assassination. I can't know what TV show is being lambasted by this movie coming out at this time and how it's tearing down what's going on in cinema with this actor whom I've never heard of. It's not anybody's fault, but
right.
At the end of the day, I'm in my 20s. I can't know more. It takes me back to the Man from Earth.
How so?
I can't know more than the most worldly person of my age.
Sure, sure.
And I can't even know that much.
Yeah, and then to go, well, someone twice your age who lived through that experience. I mean, how could you even expect to compare?
And so that maybe there's something in Sneakers that I didn't realize. That's the whole diatribe rounds back out to this. Maybe there was something in Sneakers in when it came out and what was going on in the climate of the world.
Right.
And what was going on in the climate of maybe some of those actors' careers. Maybe computers hadn't even been invented yet when Sneakers came out and it was like, wow, sure. Computers. And then holy shit, computers are real.
Well, what should come of this though, is that, we get the email and the person wants to inform us and then it just stops there. And I love that. I love when someone goes, oh, you know what else is interesting? Fucking Spanish Dracula, which I'll talk about in a minute.
We get that kind of shit all the time. And I love that. I love when
that's great. But then the moment where it turns to, and fuck you guys for not mentioning Spanish Dracula, you assholes, don't you know anything?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, man, put out your own show. What do you want from us? Yeah. I don't know. People want the world. What are you going to do? Can we talk about Spanish Dracula? I'm done whining. I want to talk about Spanish Dracula.
I'm very interested. My interest
is
peaked.
Do you know about this?
Well,
so we do have a quick opportunity on the year-end episode besides wasting...
Oh, are we going to read an email?
No, dude. I told you I have no emails for you. I'm going to give you my artistic reinterpretation of a conversation I had.
Okay.
Which is to say I'm going to do a shoddy job of telling you something someone told me that I haven't even checked on. We did all these big monster movies and there was lots to learn. And I had a blast doing them and learning all this stuff. Dracula and Spanish Dracula was the coolest fucking thing we didn't talk about, which is that in 31, while they were filming Dracula,
okay,
if I remember this correctly, and you know what, people, use the internet, figure it out for yourself. But I'm going to give you a little breadcrumb here, a little, that's not what I'm giving you. I'm giving you a thing to type into a fucking search box, all right?
Uh-huh. It's called a keyword.
Thank you. Yes. Spanish Dracula. Type that in. While they would go and film this thing during the day or whatever. I'm going to set up a little narrative, make this more fun. During the day, they would go and they would film Dracula. The actors would come together. They would act out their scenes. They would commit it to film. And then they would go home to their families. And at night, another crew of Spanish people would go in to the same sets with the same script and film Spanish Dracula. So there is... it's probably not nearly that cartoonish. And it might be Mexican Dracula now that I think about it. I don't even know. But the point is that in parallel to this regular English version being made, there was also, I suppose, a regular Spanish version.
That's fabulous.
Of the exact same movie with the same sets.
I fucking love that so much.
With totally different people. Totally different director.
I mean,
and
that takes me...
How good is that?
That takes me back to the bucket of blood, Little Shop of Horrors thing that I loved about Roger Corman, where they had the set and they had everything on retainer and all the actors were paid throughout the week. And so Corman goes, all right, change the script to be a little funnier.
Right.
We'll move this building here and shoot it again.
Well, and this probably happened a lot more than you and I are aware of, because when you start to get into the Hammer stuff and the Poe stuff, all those things use the same fucking sets.
Right.
Well, so I mean, this did start to happen a lot with
Corman.
It's
the same as, Well, and it's the same as Saw 4 and Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Right. Well, that was funny because Bousman would order sets for Saw where they had budget and then not use them and steal them and put them in Repo.
Right.
But I love the idea that there is a sort of bizarro world version of Dracula that is just in another language.
Yeah.
I love that.
I like the idea of just movie set graveyards where you can just go and reuse shit. There's when I was in Las Vegas, one of the attractions on the fucking Crazy America app or whatever the fuck it's called is the Neon Sign Graveyard, where all the neon signs in the history of Las Vegas are kept. And it's just really interesting to think of all these flashy, gaudy, completely useless pieces of crap and where they go after you no longer need Bela Lugosi walking around them.
It was funny. Penn was telling a story not too long ago about the same kind of thing. Penn Jillette has a show. He was describing in Vegas, these buildings, they get demolished and they film the demolition of the building. Mm-hmm. And then they put it on a huge fucking display in front of the new building. There's just a constant like reel of the old building being demolished. And it's just done as sort of a kitschy point of pride thing, tribute to the old building or whatever. But it is this odd sort of art piece, watching what used to be there crumble. It, just like a king who's overtaken a country, just constantly reminding people it's the old building's head on a spike out in front of their kingdom. All right, we'll end on a big up thing. So let's get the other times we were wrong about stuff.
All right.
Out of the way.
Okay.
I think we have plenty to choose from. I don't know if you'd like to go first.
I got two real big ones here. I got two really big times we were wrong.
Sure.
Wes Anderson.
What about Wes?
I was completely wrong about Wes Anderson. I hated Anderson. I thought that he was snobby and just that the films were only as vehicles to show off his prowess as a filmmaker, which is silly because that's what all films are.
Right. I was just going to say, isn't that why people make movies?
But I think I just viewed him in the wrong order. I think that there's definitely a path you can take through Wes Anderson's filmography that will not be appealing. And also I will say that now having seen every Wes Anderson movie except Bottle Rocket, I respect everything so much. I respect the method and the attention and the craft. And when we did Royal Tenenbaums on here and Fantastic Mr. Fox, I think Fantastic Mr. Fox is arguably the Wes Anderson gateway drug. I think it's the first time that you can really get.
Sure.
Because, and it comes a lot with, you know, the malleability, if that can be a word for a moment, of clay figures instead of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
In a perfectionist type situation, a little clay fox is always 100% of the time going to return what you want, even if Bill Murray is your spirit animal. And so anyway, Wes Anderson, I think, is fantastic. And I regret having gone so long hating on him, not hating him and, you know, not being evil or mean or telling people not to see his movies, but just not being open,
not being on the boat,
you know, receptive.
Yeah.
Not being receptive to Wes Anderson.
No, you're right. I was there too. I mean, I think at the same time we both went, fuck it, let's give this guy a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And we even talked about that on the first one of those episodes, how, you know, that he shares so much in common with these other directors we like in what he does and how he does it. He just has a different aesthetic and different interests. But, you know, if we talk at a higher level about it, about what's really important to him in how he tells stories, maybe mm-hmm. not in the stories he tells or the specific, you know, characters he does it through or whatever, but just the mechanism for telling a story.
Right.
And the things that deserve your attention and the small details that are important. He's the same as all of the other, you know, one man, one vision kind of people we talk about.
Sure.
I also think there's an age thing too. I think Wes Anderson is, I can't help but think he is what Tim Burton was for us when we were growing up.
I agree.
You know, he has so, I mean, down to the fucking Fantastic Mr. Fox, Nightmare Before Christmas
sure.
kind of thing.
Yep.
I mean, there's so much of that, there. And I think his films are consistently... Well, let's at least say they are consistent in a way that Tim Burton's films aren't.
Well, they were, but they aren't anymore.
Oh.
Well, I would say that the early Tim Burton films, if you look at the Batman movies and Pee-wee and Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice.
Oh, you mean about Tim Burton? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those could basically all be the same movie.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that Wes Anderson, yeah, you're correct. Wes Anderson is possibly... Again, haven't seen Bottle Rocket, and I've heard it actually is the odd duck on this front, but the consistency of his vision and storytelling is probably one of his strongest suits.
So a big one for me was the FP, and I won't say a lot about it because I talked about it back when we did it on the show, but I resisted seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
I was the fool who thinks the Onion headline is a real story. That's basically sure. what happened with the FP. I saw the trailer and could not believe there was a DDR movie. And like a fucking moron, I didn't get the joke at all. And then it did a really great job of the joke. So much so that I didn't just have my guard up, you know, watching it because I felt stupid about
right.
not knowing that it was so funny and that it was totally in on its own joke. And beyond just being in on its own joke, it took the joke places.
Yeah.
Important, powerful places that other people don't like to go. So kudos to the FP. And fuck me for not knowing.
I have one just like that. And that's 2001 A Space Odyssey. That definitely fell under the guise of films I just said I saw.
Oh, sure.
I had seen it parodied so many fucking times, I figured I had seen it.
Yeah, right.
And that society had politely gone through that movie with a fine-toothed comb and fed me the bits that mattered.
Sure.
And like I said, again, like I said on that show, the one thing that society has been beating me over the head with, and I guess I've just been ignoring, is the fact that on top of all the interesting social commentary and computers are evil and blah, 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 and all the Simpsons references and what the fuck ever, it's just a really fucking good movie. It's sure. just that good.
Yeah.
Films, legendary, I recently did a Google keyword search. I'm sorry, I did a Bing keyword search.
It's goddamn right. They didn't retweet our thing. I was so sure they would. There wasn't even a joke. I wasn't even making fun of Bing. I opened my notebook and I did a legitimate Bing search and I showed how wonderful their image search was. And then we moved on. But Bing, alas, has not sponsored your 7 of Double Feature.
I did a search for legendary films. Films that, because of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and films like that that I just have kind of, Scarface is another one that keeps coming to mind as a movie that I just haven't seen, that everybody constantly talks about and is the top movie on IMDb. Like Shawshank Redemption I saw a while ago.
Sure, sure.
And it's just these movies with their ridiculous legacies, for whatever reason, I'm really, really, I'm abhorrent initially at the size of the wave of people telling me these movies are the movies I should see.
Sure.
That to me grosses me out. I feel like when I meet two people in the same fucking room who tell me Godfather 2 is the best movie of all time, I want to walk them into another room and sit them down and go, you haven't seen Drive, have you? You haven't seen, you haven't seen Scott Pilgrim, have you?
It is very interesting how movies will become classic and time tested and no one questions. I mean, how many people do you think just freaked the fuck out when you said Drive? They went, that's absurd. That's a new movie. That movie can't be incredible. But it came out several years ago. How dare you, you know?
Well, that's the point I'm making.
But something that's been around for 30 or 40 years.
That new movies are coming out and in a lot of ways topping a lot of the old movies because they have the younger giants to stand on. That's kind of how that metaphor
plays
out.
And they are immediately relevant because they came out today. And so many of them, it's easier to see directly what they're speaking about, and they can speak about it in a way that there isn't the question of, is this message timeless? Does it still hold up today?
Right.
Everyone is also wrong about Showgirls.
I think so too. I mean,
whatever. Showgirls isn't that bad. People are ridiculous.
I got that shit. I put that shit on the show for that reason. You remember that. You were afraid Showgirls and Meet the Feebles might not be a bad idea, or it might be a bad idea.
Well, I thought it might be too much. It might wear on people.
Sure, right.
I mean, whatever. I just worry about everything that can be worried about.
Agreed. That's true. You do.
But it's not even the worst thing that was on the show this year.
No.
People are ridiculous. I had a blast watching that. It was so good.
Showgirls is great.
I don't know about Pennies from Heaven, though. We'll have to investigate that.
I don't know if we'll have to investigate that.
I can't even make
that.
The joke about it. Sorry. Well, I'm sure you were surprised every time you found you were wrong. What else surprised you this year on the show?
I think that the most obvious surprise, because we talked about it so in depth on the show, for me was The Stepford Wives. That movie scared the shit out of me. And I didn't expect that it would.
I don't feel like we had much of that conversation.
Yeah, I felt like I knew the plot of The Stepford Wives. I knew the story. I knew what it was about. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it still made me uncomfortable and got to me really stuck with me. And it's interesting because a lot of these sci-fi movies that we went back to, I just talked about it with 2001, I knew what was going on. Nothing was we watched Soylent Green. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The movies were still effective, but none to me were more effective than The Stepford Wives, except for maybe 2001. But, it scared the shit out of me. It was just, it's interesting that a film can do that without even, I mean, it had been deflated. I knew the twist. Sure. I knew what was going on.
Right, right.
And the execution was all that it mattered.
Yeah, that's good to hear. That's one that, I won't rehash what had happened on our show, but we also talked about some of the power of just that becoming a term. And
mm-hmm.
That maybe part of the movie was spoiled for people because it became so infamous, but it also had a social impact on that term gaining popularity. And just in itself, that might have allowed for social progress and social change to take place, which is amazing, which is the best thing you can hope for your film.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of lasting impact is incredible. And then for it to also hold up today, I guess, is great.
Right. I was also, here's some quick surprises. Bartleby surprised me. Kind of thought that was a show that we would just sneak on, or a film that we would just sneak on the show, just, to have a movie that kind of seemed appropriate. but it ended up being one of my favorite movies of the year.
Oh, good.
I mean, I'm always ravenous for new Crispin Glover, but just, I felt like that whole film did so many interesting things all at once that I was just really excited about it. Mm-hmm. I was also surprised by how much I was and continue to be in love with Elvira and Cassandra Peterson.
Sure.
I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that. Again, talking, this goes in direct opposition to what I was saying, but that something from before my time could be so relevant to me and just resonate with me in such an interesting way. And that also, that goes for Wayne's World, a movie slightly before my time.
I was just going to say, yeah.
But Wayne's World is fucking unreal. It's just so good.
Well, the way we talked about Wayne's World being us, and I feel the same thing about Elvira, not that we're performing the same duty or anything, but these are our people, man. These are our friends. Yep. We hang out with Elvira like we hang out with people we know. Mm-hmm. Elvira doesn't know us. Elvira doesn't think we're her friends. But we go and see these movies and we feel this sense of, I don't know, strange sense of kind of companionship with these people.
Sure.
And it's the same way with a lot of the people really that write us emails. I mean, that's actually one of the big reasons I didn't want to read the emails this year is because...
It's because you're reading personal emails from friends now and it didn't used to be that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm right on board with that.
We can kind of joke on it, but dead serious. That's... And also the best emails we got better emails this year than we've ever got before. But the emails that really hit me feel so personal that I feel like, you know, I did queue a couple of them up to read and I feel like I need permission to even go there.
Right.
People spoke a lot, especially as we faced our Kickstarter not doing well, about what this show meant to them and how, because we've been around so long and we've been coming out, you know, so consistently week after week, we've been here for events in their life. There has been a show for every week that anything has happened to you for the last 7 years.
That's true.
Or I guess what'll be going into 7 years. And people recounting, and in several occasions, recounting things that had happened in their life and kind of what Double Feature was doing at the time or how we helped them get through it. And we've always had that to some degree, but I think as we keep doing the show, we get more and more of that. Nothing makes me feel better than hearing that.
Yeah.
That I actually had some impact or people found this useful in some emotional way. That's insane to me. That's incredible. And in its way is its own surprise. See, look how on topic we are.
Wow. Nice. Yeah.
One of the things that surprised me this year was the emergence of, and we haven't seen much of it since then, but I still feel like we're going to. The emergence of this internet-made film type thing from John Dies at the End, of this sort of, you know...
The Veronica Mars movie?
Well, yeah. I mean, we haven't really had a space on our show to talk about that yet, but exactly that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the Kickstarter funding, but the entire... Do you remember back in the days of, say, Serenity? Best case of this, of Firefly, where of Carnival, a show that we've mentioned a million times because we both loved it and it went away. Things that were good that would just die, and everybody on the internet would say, but we love it. Look at the demand.
Sure.
And HBO, let's just blame them. No, who do we actually want to blame? Isn't it Fox?
Fox, you want to blame Fox.
The big reputation.
You want to blame Fox. Yeah.
For foxing their shows, even though HBO like struck me so much because of Carnival. But they would axe shows. Mm-hmm. And when fans would cry out, but we loved that, HBO, probably rightfully so, would go, well, you didn't really watch or pay for it. And I mean, the numbers are just there. Mm-hmm. It's not like they were canceling shows to spite us. But they had more profitable things they could put in that time slot that people would show up and watch. And there wasn't a good way to convert the people who went, oh, fuck, wait a second, I want that. Mm-hmm. I will give money to actually put their money in and then get the thing back. And with the emergence of things like the Veronica Mars movie, there is a direct way for people to go, I will give you money. In fact, here it is right now. Well, please give me the thing.
And there's also Netflix now resurrecting thing after they've resurrected Arrested Development. They're resurrecting.
I think they just announced a Magic School Bus thing too, bringing that
back.
Yeah,
I mean, they're resurrecting a ton of.
While we were doing our Kickstarter, Reading Rainbow.
Yeah, man.
Fucking thing. So the internet is kind of speaking up both in what it wants to see come back, but also just in the ideas it wants to promote.
Mm-hmm.
John Dies at the End was a fucking in-joke for the internet. And we're seeing more and more of these movies that are taking this culture that has, you know, sort of strange internet subculture and making films out of them. And I'm still really interested to see more of that stuff. I was surprised that people actually liked Evil Dead 2 more than Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
It's nice in the rare occasion where people email us and tell us, hey, you know what? You're not the only one.
Yeah, that was nice.
Because that basically never happens. People go, what the fuck is wrong with you? A bunch of people silently nod along as we're talking.
Right.
Or nod to sleep, maybe.
Right.
And sometimes people email us and go, yeah, I don't know what's up with Army of Darkness, but Evil Dead 2 is great. And actually, and this will change now because we're saying this into microphones, no one emailed us to tell us we were insane about Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Everybody emailed us to tell us that they liked Evil Dead. Seth emailed us and Jeff agreed with him. A couple people emailed us and essentially went, yeah, finally, someone's speaking my opinion. They feel the oppression of the Army of Darkness masses.
Yeah, those guys.
So that was pleasant. All right, why don't you tell me about the single best Die Antwoord song? I mean films.
Oh, okay.
No, wait, I do mean Die Antwoord song. Have you heard that fucking album?
I have, yeah.
Of course you have, I know that.
Of course I have. Come on.
The Nightmare on Elm Street song?
Yeah.
This probably comes from the fact that Die Antwoord listened to our podcast every
it's
week.
It's gotta be.
No, it's not at
all. I think that they make more film references than any band I've ever heard in my entire life. And I listen to Rob Zombie.
I was going to throw a Power Man 5000 reference in there just because I felt like our Rob Zombie residuals aren't coming in at a fast enough pace to keep up with our...
Right.
No, you're right. There's a bunch of really great stuff on that album. I'm glad there's a new Die Antwoord album, but that's not what I wanted to talk about.
All right. So I've got an interesting little thing here. I do have for you, Eric, the best movie that we covered on Double Feature this year. I have that information.
And you want to start
privy
with
to that information. No, I'm gonna start with something that I left off of best pairs. But it is a best pair, but also two of the probably the runner up for best movies. Tied for second.
What you've done is take your sloppy note keeping for previous topics that we've already passed by and use them as a teaser for an upcoming countdown-esque.
Yeah,
yeah, I see what you're doing here.
Network and Pump Up the Volume.
Okay.
Tied for my second favorite movie this year on Double Feature. Really though.
Wow, what a good pair.
Network so deeply affected me that we actually sampled it on the new Stepfather Gets Mohawk record.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
I love when lame things that you and I do can influence your real art that you actually make outside of the show. That makes me so happy.
You and I were already talking about how the whole thing was Bucket of Blood themed and how that's really not exciting for anybody, but you and I, I was ecstatic about that. But yeah, so Network, I fucking love the movie. I think that it is one of the most topical movies we covered this year. So yeah, I fucking sampled it, but also Pump Up the Volume, equally fucking good.
Yeah.
And equally fucking topical and fucking 10 years, 15 years later than Network. It's interesting to me that in the era that we were just talking about, the internet era and the television era, but I mean the Renaissance television era, we're not talking actual television, we're talking fucking premium channels, baby. That the two most apropos and resonant films for me this year were about radio and news broadcasting before CNN.
Well, we didn't cover any of that on The Lords of Salem because, you know, our show is only so long.
Right.
But that was a big piece of the atmosphere on that.
Yeah.
When I was talking about replacing all of the trailers and Deep South and Sandy Dirty Motel and all of that, it got replaced with people on the radio.
Yeah. It was very, very, very reminiscent of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Sure.
AKA Dennis Hopper's Already Got the Gas in Them.
Right, right.
But neither of those, as good as they were, even combined, are my favorite movie of the year. I dare you, I defy you, Eric 13, to guess what my favorite movie of the year was. And it is that obvious, I promise.
Drive Angry.
Close.
Hold on, this is my chance to name check all of the movies that we haven't talked about yet. No, sorry. What is it? Lay it on me.
It's Curse of Chucky.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be?
That was the best, hands down, the best movie of the year for me. Probably not anybody else's favorite, and everybody's right.
No, sorry, I'm raising my hand.
Oh,
that
really?
Was also,
yeah.
No, are you kidding me? Curse of Chucky. I know we come on the show every time and say it's the best goddamn movie.
Yeah.
But this is the show where we get to be transparent because all of the movies are on the show, and
right.
That was the best goddamn movie.
That one, hands down. I mean, the biggest travesty. I you know my reputation with Twitter, where I kind of don't tweet unless it comes off my Instagram or you tweet at me.
Right. Or Ben Ecker sings Nine Inch Nails songs.
Right.
You.
Yeah, that's my other. If people tweet at me, I tweet so hard. I tweet so hard. Oh, I got a raging tweet.
Okay, that's stop that.
But one of the only completely voluntary, unsolicited tweets I twat this year was at Don Mancini about the travesty that was Curse of Chucky not being theatrically released.
Gotta reach out, let him know.
I mean, that was it. That I think that movie, just on a fundamental level, was everything that horror has needed for probably 30 years. 20.
Well, this happens all the time in our show and just in our lives. We did this, it's on the same year of double feature as 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get all fucking freaked out that we just used to maybe a tiny bit of hyperbole here. But for you and I think we have a natural instinct that we need to oversell things that people don't appreciate.
Agreed. Yeah.
And after having done this for so long, we actually legitimately feel that way about these things.
Right.
For me, I think the things that Curse of Chucky did were more important than 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were more important than, I don't know, would I pick any other random thing on here that is like a way more important film than than The Curse of Chucky is.
Night of the Living Dead.
But you know what? There are elements of 2001 that cannot get to me as personally as Curse of Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody, first of all, there's no underdog element to it. Certainly not anymore. Everybody already knows that Kubrick is a good filmmaker and he's a crazy person and interesting. And you know what I'm saying?
Can I get a choice for understatement of the year? My understatement of the year is when you said everybody knows Kubrick is a good filmmaker.
See, this is what I'm talking about, right? Nobody,
that's my understatement of the year.
Nobody needs to say that. And because of that, it doesn't speak to me as personally as it does for other people.
Sure.
But then I see this movie, Curse of Chucky, which hits all of these amazing spots for me and some spots that I think are really important for the genre and just for
society.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it's saying things that I think are relevant, in some way important, and it's doing them in a genre that's having a lot of trouble with that. And it's also paving the way. It's providing a potential road to fucking salvation for a genre that always seems to be in trouble with a lot of these things. And it did it at a spot in my life that is just like great for that. There's so much I could say about Curse mm-hmm. of Chucky that hits all of these sweet spots. It gives me a renewed hope for cinema, and it's just a great fucking time. And it speaks to me in a way that other films can't. And no one knows it, and no one will believe us.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it has this incredible underdog quality. And underdog qualities, not only do I feel I need to evangelize them, the movies that have that quality, but I also just like underdogs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, oh, it's an underdog, it needs my help. But underdog is a plus to the film. It is another quality
absolutely.
Of things that I like.
Yep.
It is the counterculture piece of me that I just, I adore it. Curse Chucky gets everything right. I mean, I just can't say enough good things about that. I had a couple others that were really, really great this year. I'm not going to do the super lame countdown, whatever thing, because it really, Curse of Chucky, it hits the spot. I didn't know Triangle was coming. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know. didn't see it coming, and you're like, whoa, what's this triangle? Hey, check this out. And holy crap, that was a great time. I love that. And I think you said something about bottles on that show, films in bottles or something.
Yeah.
And that was just a wonderful way to put that. Everything about that was good. Dancer in the Dark and actually that and Dogville were both. Lars von Trier is one of those names we pulled off that list from this time last year. That is hitting that spot, man.
I'm fucking pussy deep in Lars von Trier's filmography right now, man, and it only gets better from there.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more of that showing up. We haven't even talked about it, but I can tell we have we may have a Lars von Trier adventure ahead of us. We're so into that right now. We didn't talk a lot about that list, and it seems so unfair to pull Lars von Trier off of that because he was a filmmaker we both kind of knew about.
Right.
And there is still a need to explore. But yeah, we have the weird list on the website. We talked about it last year. Go to doublefeatureshow.com and look at that and dig up the year five, wow, end of year, whatever show and listen to us talk all about it. But yeah, man, Lars von Trier all over it. And then one more for me. And really, you know, I adore all of these movies. I can't stress that enough. And I adore that listeners made us watch stuff and it was always just an awesome, weird time. There was never a time a listener said, hey, watch this. And I went, wow, I got nothing out of that. Nothing but surprises there. But man, we put together that Upstream Color Wrong episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened on the show too. I love Wrong.
Me too.
But I remember you really digging Wrong on that show and mm-hmm. me really digging Upstream Color.
Yeah.
And so it was hard for me to even focus when we had that much good on the show.
Yeah.
And I don't want to start doing that again by just singling out Upstream Color. So Wrong was also a really, really great time and fantastic and bizarre and another one of those breaths of fresh air into stale filmmaking. And Upstream Color was everything I wanted from a Primer follow-up and about 10,000 things I didn't know I wanted. What a good year of movies for this show.
Possibly the best year so far of movies on Double Feature.
Yeah, and you know, we're not doing all these current movies, so this doesn't really say anything about the state of cinema.
Not even close.
But it is a really optimistic kind of message for me. That
there is still good movies out there.
We're still discovering all this stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And a mixture of things that people consider classic and a mixture of movies nobody's ever fucking heard of and a mixture of, you know, stuff that did come out pretty recently. You look for it and you find it and I'm just happy that people actually do follow along with the show and watch every week because they've gotten to experience, you know, that moment you get where you're watching a good film and nobody's with you.
Right.
You go, oh, fuck.
It's so bad.
Everybody needs to see this.
It's so bad.
Oh, people don't even know about this thing.
It's awful.
And that never happens to us because there's always at least one fucking guy watching all the movies.
Do you ever check the timestamp when that happens and go, have I not watched enough that I can just stop watching and then find somebody start it over?
Oh, no. Every time. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a bunch of movies where I've only seen the first 6 minutes.
Because you know it's awesome and you need somebody else to see it with you.
The worst is when that happens with the TV series.
Yeah.
You go, oh, this is one of those terrible things I just throw out in the background and not pay attention to. And then you can't stop watching it.
Yeah.
You go, this is a serious endeavor I'm about to embark on here. I better pay attention. Really quick before we go, I don't really have a question. I just want to say there are 10 additional content episodes and tell me about one that stands out to you for whatever fucking reason.
Well, I already mentioned the Western one. That one was pretty wild.
And we fit a lot of movies in.
Yeah.
Which we were worried about how are we going to do this, but I think that worked out pretty well.
I think that the Western one does stand out to me because, like I said, it basically immersed me in a genre that I was not... even that I thought I was familiar with and I was fucking wrong. But I will also say that Scary Movie, same thing.
Yeah.
Surprised me, just threw me into something I was completely afraid of. And I came out of the other side, not necessarily loving the whole ride, but definitely having a respect for something that I thought that I knew better on the front end of. I thought before we watched the scary movies that I knew exactly what they were about and that I could predict my feelings on the other end. And having watched all four, I mean,
there's five of those, buddy.
Having watched all five, and this is no surprise, shocker, the hosts of Double Feature were wrong about something.
Also just proves that I can fucking enjoy anything.
Mm-hmm.
We watched those and I thought they would have no joy to them. And really, that was the only question they had to answer in order to win. They didn't have to be prolific or do anything even notable or important. But I went, those are joyous pieces of trash that do not count as films. And so when we showed up and they were not joyless, then I was wrong and Scary Movie had won. So good for you, Scary Movie. But also, you liked Bad Boy Bubby a lot. Don't lie.
I do. But it wasn't my favorite additional content, but it's still one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, and that was another one of the, we just did not hit on enough the bizarre gems that people sent us. And I'm really excited to do this again for another year. Think of all of the weird stuff we'll be talking about this time next year. It's going to be awesome. Big thanks to everybody who gave money for this year of the show. And man, that was close. Man, that was close. If you didn't check out our movie, our 20-minute film, go and do that. Kickstarter.doublefeatureshow.com, I think. It's probably still where you can do that. Like I don't know where to do it. Look it up on the internet search. Internet search. What's the Arrested Development joke in the new one? Do a something search for it. And then next time on the show, we obviously have two movies.
Something light, you know, something airy, something that says riding in cars with boys. We're going to do Cosmopolis and Holy Motors.
And hey, you know what? Death to Double Feature.
Watch more fucking film.
Bye.